Welcome in, everyone, to your Monday morning edition of Locked On Knicks, post-weekend edition. We got one game from over the weekend to break down for you guys. Miami Heat beat the Knicks 100-92. Felt kind of like a home game for the Heat, and it was really a tale of two halves for the Knicks. So in our first segment, we are going to break down what was actually a very good first half.
And then a second half that involved a whole lot less ball movement, and some Dwayne Wade moments of heroism, and then Deion Waiters ultimately putting the Knicks away.
And finally, we'll close off with some Knicks news and notes from the last couple of days, one arguably more important than the other. First, Frank Ntilikina's season is over, so we will discuss that, kind of give a little bit of a reaction to how Frank's season was at large. And secondly, it appears that Kristaps Porzingis is being investigated for a rape last year in his New York City apartment, which we will briefly touch on because it's a news item that is definitely related to the Knicks. All that and more when we get back in to Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, counting and one. Fisdale
pokes the stick. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier.
Becomes infectious.
All right, welcome in, everyone, to your Monday Locked On Knicks. I'm Alex Wolf. He's Gavin Shaw. This was a game that the Knicks lost again. Miami Heat versus New York Knicks on Saturday night. 100-92, the Heat won. It was Dwayne Wade's, you know, one last dance, final time at MSG. They played him all kinds of video promos, and the fans cheered for him all night. And it was, I think, if I recall, I bitched and moaned about this the last time the Heat were in town, but yeah. I think it got pushed a little bit too far with just how much the Garden was cheering for Wade and the Heat, especially considering that it was a close game for the most part for the whole time for the Knicks, and a lot of them were actually playing well. But at any rate, it was a kind of a tale of two halves for the Knicks. They went into the break ahead of Miami, which was nice to see. They kind of ceded a little bit of a lead that they had built up. I think it was, I forget what they maxed at. It was, I want to say about 10 points or 12 points, I think. Or no, 10. 12 was Miami's biggest lead. 9 was the Knicks' biggest lead. Sorry. They built a pretty comfortable cushion at one point, and then sort of, I think they went into the half up by 6. But it was a really good half, Gavin. I don't know. Clyde was beside himself with how well the Knicks were passing the ball and, you know, how much they were just running an offense and seemed really good with it. And, you know, you had a new starting lineup out there that all seemed fairly balanced, which was good to see. It was Emmanuel Mudiay, Damian Dotson, Kevin Knox, Luke Kornet, and Mitchell Robinson. Surprisingly worked really, really well. And, you know, was whipping the ball around the perimeter, finding people for open looks. They couldn't hit many of the open looks. Otherwise, the Knicks might have been up by as much as like 15 or 20. Going into halftime, but I thought it was just a really, really good half of basketball from them.
Yeah, and it was all about, outside of Damian Dotson, like everyone in that starting lineup had, if not their halves of the season, like each individually played one of their better halves of the season, and it all sort of came together. Like I almost don't know who to start off with out of that group. I think you probably have to start off with Mitchell Robinson just because of how ridiculously active he was in this game. He started off with like a mini, like little, like dribble drive that you don't really see from him, and then just had this insane sequence defensively. And it felt like it all happened in about like a 5-minute stretch. He got switched on to Goran Dragic one possession, shut him down, made him pass. Dragic kind of, well, he's like, all right, let me get it back. Like I can take this like rookie, like 7-footer off the dribble. And again, Robinson just totally denied him, like slid his feet right with Goran, who's like one of like the craftier point guards in the league, even if he's maybe a little bit past his prime at this point. Then like very next play, he destroys Dwayne Wade on a drive, just like absolutely annihilates his shot. picks off a pass. The play after that starts off a fast break that would have ended with him getting a dunk if Moutier didn't get fouled. Then Wade tries to throw like an alley-oop against him. He blocks that too. Then an offensive rebound put back, and then Wade tries to go at him a third time, does like a little like ball fake, and Robinson blocks him again. So it was just like it was ridiculous. I mean, obviously like three blocks, all of them on Dwayne Wade, and the offensive stuff was really good defensively. Also had that steal, had that switch. So it was literally just like it was a dominant first quarter for Mitchell Robinson. It just feels like one of those moments where you're seeing the future for him a little bit, and like stuff that's going to kind of become routine for him, but it's still exceptional at this point. And I think in a way that makes it just even more special that you get those like little flashes of it right now.
Yeah, I really enjoyed his play on Dwayne Wade, because Clyde even mentioned, I think that Clyde feels in many ways similar to how I feel about the whole like cheering for Dwayne Wade and all that stuff. Like he kept trying to be like nice about it and be like, yeah, you know, he's here, it's his last time, blah, blah, blah. But you could tell that it always irks Clyde if the Garden's cheering for anybody other than the Knicks. And he made a couple little jabs of like, oh, Mitchell Robinson's not being too welcoming to Dwayne Wade today. He's not revering him, you know, whatever. And
yeah,
because it seemed like it was like Mitch's personal mission to put it to Dwayne Wade today, because he stuffed the crap out of him those two times. And I think my favorite play from Mitch, it only half counted, but there was this beautiful sequence where he played a passing lane. I forget who was passing to who. I think it was Dragic passing to someone on the wing, and Mitch like played it perfectly, and you know, kind of used that like phenomenal length and length to kind of reach out there and swat the ball up, and then you know, tipped it to Moutier to go out on the break, and Moutier went down, and Moutier actually got fouled right before he was able to pass it to Mitch for this like fantastic alley-oop that would have like brought the Garden down if it had counted. But no, everybody knew that it didn't count because the whistle blew like well before it got thrown down. But that was actually like very shortly after Wade had checked in too, and so the crowd was already kind of rocking, like, because everybody was giving Wade like a standing O when he first came in. And then since everybody was already kind of in a frenzy and paying attention, everybody like freaked out when Mitch put that one down. And I wish it would have counted, because it would have been one of the best dunks of the year, and one of the best like Mitch sequences of the year, I think.
Yeah, that was just a great run. And the thing was, it wasn't all him. I wanted to touch on like Kevin Knox's play in the first quarter. And he's obviously just over, I mean, most of this month, really like the last like 7-8 games in particular, he's sort of gotten back to what we were seeing from him early in the season, which I think you really needed to see from him. And I think this was one of his better efforts, in that it wasn't just contingent on him shooting the ball well. And he's been doing that all month. I think Breen pointed out during the game, but he shot 43% from three over the course of March. But I think what's gotten so much better is his ability to leverage that shooting into getting to the basket. He had that one, which I think was his first basket of the game. It was like a little like jab move into like this like winding like double crossover, and like he still got stopped like 3 feet like short of the rim, but it was just so long he was still able to lay it in. And then had another one where he just like went straight into Bam Adebayo, or as Clyde would call him, Adebado, or
Adebado. Yeah.
Adebado. Yeah, that was it. I think that was my favorite part about that, is like he like actually like got Breen to say it that way one time.
It's so funny, because I was hoping we would do a brief overtime segment, and I was totally going to bring that up, that he was he was calling him Adebado the whole game. Yeah. And nobody corrected him. I feel like nobody ever corrects Clyde, because they just probably just roll with it and realize it's entertaining. And then Breen at one point just goes like, yeah, not Adebado, Adebayo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just like, oh, man.
And like Breen's just like the ultimate professional, so it's really, it's an accomplishment if you're able to get him to slip up that way. But anyway, so he goes right into the body of Bam and just like kind of like finishes around him. And it's like those types of plays, like, I mean, they're just really, really tough shots. So it's like, it's kind of hard to gauge how consistent he can be with that, even as he continues to get better and stronger and more athletic. But it's still encouraging to see him finish those types of plays, because you just kind of get the feel like he's never going to be like so explosive. That like he did have that one dunk in the second half, but like where like he'll consistently be able to get all the way to the rim. And I think because of that, his success as an offensive player is a little bit more contingent on his ability to have both a really strong touch around the basket and be able to use that length really well. And there were those two big plays in this game where he was able to do just that, and it was sort of what he was doing earlier in the year. So I really like that from him.
Yeah, Knox was using that like lengthy first step of his pretty well because, you know, like you just said, he doesn't have the most burst in the world, so he's not going to be blowing by guys, you know, that often. But he's gotten pretty good at kind of delivering a little bit of a head fake when he's out on the perimeter and then, you know, just taking that really long first stride to give himself kind of the leg up that he needs to create, you know, that little bit of space to get into the hoop. And I thought he did really well with that today too. And he was like very much not afraid of contact today either, which is like very, very reassuring when you're watching him, because there are times where he seemed really averse to contact this year. And he seemed to really embrace it in this one. I guess I'll move next to, Moutier, I know he had 24 points and he was pretty efficient again. I wasn't super thrilled with his overall play because I feel like, again, like if he shot his season's average in this game, he would have been a negative. And that always kind of bothers me. But, I mean, I guess you could say the same about Knox or anybody else. But Moutier was 6 for 12, 2 of 5 from 3. He shot 12 free throws. I mean, he was getting to the line more than anybody. He almost shot as many free throws just by himself as the whole rest of the team combined. The whole team, other than Moutier, shot 13, and Moutier shot 12 today, yesterday. So that was definitely a good part of his game today. But all in all, though, like even in that first half, I guess in the first half, I liked how he was playing because he was probing the defense and he was actually passing out and stuff like that. And then I feel like in the second half, he sort of reverted back to Boudier tendencies of, not really looking for others quite as much and focusing more on getting himself to the hoop or, you know, taking his shots or whatever. So that part, I guess, as always, isn't great with his game, but unless you have anything to add on Moutier, I kind of wanted to talk about Cornette's first half because I thought that his was really good.
Yeah, no, go ahead. He was the next guy I was going to bring up.
Yeah, I mean, Cornette was great in the first half. Second half, we'll talk about in a sec. But in the first half, I mean, he was killing it. He had first half numbers 4-7 from three. All he took was three-pointers because, you know, the man knows where his bread is buttered. And took two free throws as well. He had 5 rebounds, 3 assists, no turnovers, and 2 blocks. I mean, him and Mitch in that first half, I thought, were, like, really, really good together. Mitch provides that vertical threat, and Cornette was that perfect, like, on defense, he can still block people and stuff and patrol the inside, you know, if Mitch gets pulled out to the outside. But on offense, I mean, Luke pretty much just knows, like, I'm going to set a couple off-ball screens, and then I'm going to find my spot on the outside and just wait for the ball. And if I get it, then I know I have the green light to shoot, and that's it. And it was kind of like the best of the Luke Cornette experience in this one.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I thought his passing was actually really good. Like I can't remember if it was like the second or third basket of the game. He had like a relatively open three, and I feel like he's just because he doesn't always touch the ball that often, and like, I mean, a lot of times, at least, like, especially over the last 40 games or so, like, he really hasn't gotten consistent minutes. So he is prone to sometimes just jacking threes, like, whenever he has, like, an inch of space. And this time he got the ball, someone closed out on him, and he just made, like, the functional extra pass to Knox, which was, I mean, it wasn't a spectacular play, but it was just sort of a good one. And then there was another play that was, like, at least for my money, like, maybe, like, the best, like, tic-tac-toe passing sequence of the game. Knox, like, probed a little bit, drew a defender, like, a step over, kicked it to Moutier. Moutier, like, took one dribble, then, like, launched, like, a bullet underneath the rim to Cornette, who just immediately, like, tapped it over to Moutier for a dunk. And it was just, again, like, one of those plays with, like, that just make you think, like, okay, like, at least, like, he's reading the floor well. He sees what's going on. Again, like, I mean, end of season, like, not that, like, the Heat obviously had a whole lot to play for, so, like, I don't want to, like, diminish what the Knicks did in the first half of this one, but, I mean, you never really want to read too much into it with these fringe guys, but I just thought he had some good moments.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I thought it was one of the better, I guess, halves of basketball that Cornette's played this year, at least, especially since he had that, like, hot stretch in whenever it was, like, December, January, somewhere around that time when he first started starting. I guess it was, like, the end of December when he first started starting and was, you know, put together that stretch of, like, 7 or 8 games where you're like, oh, my God, he's, like, indispensable. He's so good. He's, like, 45% three-point shooter, blah, blah, blah. this was definitely right up there with any of those games as far as better effort, you know, from him as far as playing within the team concept and really looking for others and, you know, like you said, not necessarily just being Mr. Quick Trigger, even if he was by and large for the game. He was kind of just looking for things within the offense and all that. But I feel like we're going to need to shout out Kadeem Allen too, but why don't we save that for the next segment? We'll finish up on kind of the positives from the game and then get into that second half, which wasn't quite as good. So we'll take our first break and we'll come back, talk about the second half of the Heat game, which was...
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf with you. We hope you're listening on the Himalaya podcast app. A new platform where you can listen to your podcast. Alex, I thought it was interesting, kind of compared it to Spotify. They do a really good job of letting you curate exactly the type of content you want to get, and it truly is the best place to listen to podcasts. So we hope you're listening on Himalaya. All right, Alex, let's get back into it. Obviously, the second half was not as good as the first. I think the statistic that sort of defined the shift is the Knicks had 14 assists in half number one, and just six in half number two. And sometimes, like, you hear a number like that, like Breen said that with, like, 2-3 minutes left, I think, and you're like, oh, huh, that's weird. I didn't really notice it. Like, I thought that was kind of readily apparent in the second half of this one, that the ball stopped pinging around as much. Guys really had a much quicker trigger offensively, and because of it, the offense really bogged down to a pretty dramatic degree. The Knicks had, let me see here, they had 61 points at halftime, and they only scored 31 in half number two. So that just sort of gives you an all-encompassing idea, and it's pretty amazing that they only ended up losing by eight, given that. But they really just fell off a cliff offensively in the second half.
Yeah, it was like both sides seemed to kind of, you know, come out asleep in the second half. You know, the Knicks in particular, more so than the Heat, obviously, because they wound up losing. But, like, yeah, it was very sloppy. Start second half, the Knicks in particular, it seemed like every time down the floor, you know, where they were making these nice crisp passes in the first half and really looking to find the open man, in the second half it was either like a guy would come down and dribble it off his foot, or like, you know, someone would try to complete a cross-court pass directly through the lane or something like that, you know, which never works because someone's always going to be able to reach out and snag that. And that happened, I feel like, 4, 5, 6 times. They had 11 turnovers, you know, in the second half, as the Heat also had 12, which I guess speaks that much worse to how the, you know, the Knicks were. But, like, you know, the Heat had Dion Waiters shooting as well as he was, which, like, even if guys had hands in his face, he was knocking down three-pointers and stuff and just generally having himself a good half. And the Knicks in the second half didn't have anyone that could really hit with any consistency. Kevin Knox, I guess you could say, had the best half of anybody. He had 9 points on 4-10 shooting. And Kadeem Allen had the best passing half. He had 5 out of the Knicks' 6 assists in the second half. So he seemed to be one of the only guys that was consistently, like, trying to break down the defense and create for others in, you know, a non-stupid way, you know, not trying to find things that weren't there. And, you know, it just generally playing the smart brand of basketball that we like from him. The only bad part with Kadeem was that he just couldn't hit anything today as far as shooting the basketball. So a lot of, you know, the kind of attention that he draws when he's actually shooting well that helps him with passing, he didn't really have. But all in all, he played probably the best out of anybody, I would say, in the second half, even though it was a woeful second half.
Yeah, and I thought his best moment came in the first, like where like he sort of crossed D Wade into like the dirt and had a lay in. And in the second half again, I think you're right. He was like smart about probing and he was fairly functional as a ball handler, but it wasn't like anything to write home about. And there was just no one else to really bring up the rear end, like knock some, like who got off to like that hot start, like hitting his first three, like only made 1 of his last 7 from range. Did have one like deep one that was pretty nice in the second half, but just sort of felt like he started settling. He did also, I think it's worth noting, he had that like one dunk where like someone was like really like over committing on a closeout to him, and he just sort of like looped his way around and came in and flushed it with 2 hands. So he had some moments, but then also like some frustrating moments for Knox in the second half. Like not only like the over-reliance on the three ball, but he also had that one play where he did try to dribble drive when like there was like sort of like an easy extra pass he could have made to Damian Dotson, who admittedly wasn't shooting well, but was just wide, wide open beyond the three-point arc, and he ended up dribbling it right off his foot instead. And then with just under 2 minutes left, this basically sealed the game. He got a wide-open three-pointer and just missed it. And I kind of liked earlier in the season, and like I was probably reading too much into it, and it was a little bit of small sample-size theater, but it always seemed like when Knox like had a chance to hit like a crucial three and he had like room, like I thought like it went in like a disproportionate amount. I'm like, okay, that's kind of like a good sign. Like when he like can really focus and like lock in, like he's just a really good shooter. And I feel like that's sort of gone away as the season has gone on. Maybe that's just like intuitive. And I don't know if the numbers actually back that up, but still like that was kind of a shot that especially how well he's been playing and how well he's been shooting. I really wanted to go in and he just didn't quite hit it. So at least to me, that was sort of a microcosm of the Knicks as a whole in the second half.
Yeah, well, so that kind of leads right into one of my non-Knicks players related negatives of the second half, which was that the Garden at a certain point essentially started cheering for the Heat instead of the Knicks. Like as an extension of cheering for D Wade, they actually started like actively cheering for anything that the Heat were doing. Like I thought it was kind of gross, honestly. I hate when that happens at the Garden. And clearly like you could see a zillion people wearing Wade jerseys. I always find it so funny that the Heat can't sell out their own arena for, like, a playoff game, practically. And, like, you can always see all these Heat fans at Knicks games. I don't know where they come from. But, yeah, it started off as just cheering for Wade, you know, when he was doing stuff. And then towards the end, Waiters hit a three-pointer late in the game. And there was, like, a loud round of applause for him for hitting that, and like the Garden kind of popped a little bit, and I was like, that sucks. Like that's got to really suck for the young players out there that like no matter what with this season, you know, like you got to at least you got to support your own players, especially when they're kids like that, you know, like they're all like first, second, third year players by and large on the Knicks this year, and you're cheering for the other team. It's just, I don't know. Today in particular, it really rubbed me the wrong way. I could see, like, cheering for Dwayne Wade because he's been getting that treatment everywhere. And it's right to respect him because he's, you know, he's a really good player. And, you know, even if he killed the Knicks over the years, kind of like LeBron, you know, there's a certain level of respect you carry, especially when you're a basketball town where, like, okay, I understand this guy killed us, but, you know, it's right to respect him. And but then it kind of just took a turn into, like, outright cheering for the Miami Heat to beat the Knicks down the stretch of a close game when the Knicks actually had a shot to win, and that just didn't feel right to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I have, like, I think more mixed emotions on these situations than you do because I have zero issue with them cheering for Wade. I did get, like, a little annoyed, too, like, when there was, like, one call, like, down the stretch that went Miami's way and, like, the Garden kind of, like, erupted. Like, I'm kind of with you. That's, like, a step too far, but I guess –
Can I interrupt real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
I forgot all about this one until you just mentioned it.
Yeah, so sure.
I know which one you're talking about, and it was particularly egregious. Dwayne Wade went up to get an alley-oop and kicked Cornette in the nuts, man.
Yeah.
And they were showing that on the replay, and the Garden's like booing the refs for calling an offensive foul on Wade. He tried to kick your guy in the nuts, and it was like Draymond-esque, man. Like, it was a blatant kick-out. He knew what he was doing. that was terrible. That was the worst one. I can't believe I forgot to bring that up.
Yeah. It was, like, just in terms of, like, raw, like, martial arts mechanics, like, I thought it was, like, pretty impressive that Wade was – I don't even know what he was – it was almost like he knew he wasn't going to get high enough for the dunk and wanted, like, the bailout of, like, saying, like, oh, I got fouled. Or, like, my second theory on that is that he, like, almost wanted to, like, leverage himself off of Cornette's giant balls and, like use them to, like, elevate him, like – a couple inches higher to dunk the basketball. Like, it was almost like he was trying to use Cornette as, like, a platform.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, now I'm imagining, like, it's just like one of those, like, exercise balls now. Let me just get this leverage.
It's going to be Luke Human Trampoline Cornette.
I can't jump this high anymore.
that's a kind of, intuitively, like, that was, like, my first, I was like, was he trying to, like, jump off, like, Cornette's leg, basically? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he was just trying to create space by fucking ninja kicking him. But I guess we'll never know for sure. I don't know, but it was. I thought it was like arguably a dirty play, and it was just it felt wrong that the Garden was sitting there like no boo, like because he didn't even finish the alley oop. He didn't even finish it. So like, who cares? It's not like he took away an alley oop. He missed it. All it was going to be was foul shots, and it's stupid, very stupid.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of great that, like, I don't know if you saw this, but, like, Wade was, like, cursing out one of the refs after the game.
Yeah.
Like, one of the refs, like, it seemed like the ref had, like, almost come up to him to be like, hey, great career, man. Like, Wade was like, nah, like, fuck you. Like, yeah. I don't know. I didn't think – I mentioned this on, like, the podcast before, but, like, one time when the Heat were in Phoenix, we went to cover a shoot-around, and me and, like, a friend of mine, like, kind of just – hung around till the end, and we just, like, sort of, like, went up to, like, Wade and Bosch and be like, hey, could we, like, talk to you guys? For, like, a few minutes, like, both of them were, like couldn't have been – I mean, like, I think most people, like, know this was Bosch already. But, like, both of them, like, couldn't have been nicer and, like, literally, like, I mean, with two, like, college-age kids, like, sat there, like, answered questions for, like, 10 minutes, like, after everything else was done. So I have a warm spot for Dwayne Wade. I didn't think his conduct was, like, picture-perfect in this one, but, you know what I mean? Again, like, when you're on your way out, you kind of have the right to be a little bit – crotchety. As far as, again, like, the cheering, I don't know. It bothers me, like, a little bit, but, like, I guess, like, you also, like, have to take into account, like, the factor, like, the Knicks should, like, hypothetically want to lose, and, like, you could also say, like, all right, but you don't have to, like, openly cheer for that, and, like, you, like, if they're in a close game, like, I think we're both generally in agreement, like, all right, like, they should, like, try and win it, and, like, that should be, like, the fans' mindset, but I don't know. I guess I feel like I have, like, a multifaceted take on it. Like, I kind of sort of see both sides, though in this particular case, there certainly were moments where it was egregious. Very last thing I wanted to mention before we finish up this second segment. What did you make of Wade just, like, flat out, like, denying Kadeem Allen the jersey swap?
I mean, It was Moutier.
Oh, you saw Moutier, yeah, sorry.
He sunned Moutier to death.
Yeah, I felt for Moutier because, like, again, like, I know we question his game. He seems like a really good. I kind of hesitate to say kid because I think, like, he's the same age as me. Seems like a good guy, but, like, that was just, like, it was, like, both, like, brutal and, like, kind of funny. It was, like, it was just an insane moment.
Yeah, it was awkward. I feel like, truthfully, I feel bad for him. It was hilarious. Like, especially because it got picked up perfectly by the cameras. Like, because they're following Wade around, and then. Moutier had to, like, snatch Wade to be like, hey, like, can I get a hug from you or whatever? And then Wade turns around, gives Kadeem Allen a hug, gives Moutier a hug, and then you just hear Moutier be like, hey, can I get your jersey? And Wade's like, nah, I'm already giving it to someone. I'm like, I didn't even see who he gave it to. I don't know if he gave it to a player or, like, an arena staff or what. Yeah. Or maybe he gave it to Fizdale or something.
Gave it to Clyde.
Did he actually?
No.
I was gonna say that would be iconic. That would be pretty sweet. I feel like I didn't see the actual photo of whoever he gave it to though, because normally he's been taking those photos after every game.
Yeah, it could end up, like, in the Basketball Hall of Fame or something. That's, like, I guess, like, kind of monumental, like, his last game, like, at
the guard.
MSG. Like, what I took away from that, like, when he said, like, no, like, I have to give it to, like, I legitimately, like, kind of thought, like, he had, like, committed to, like, either, like, sell it for, like, charity or, like, some basketball-related organization, or the Knicks, like, as a team, like, collectively were like, oh, like, we want to, like, put this up somewhere in the Garden. I'm not sure. That's kind of the feeling I got, because, like, when I read, like, all the articles about it, they never, like, clarified, like, some, like, you would have thought, like, if he was giving it to, like, another person, like, it would have been, like, it would have been on camera.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
so I don't think it was, like, meant as, like, an insult, but, like, I feel like not even like just in the awkward moment, but I feel for Moutier because I bet like he went into the game thinking like, all right, like I got to kick ass today. Like if I have a really great game, like I can ask him for the jersey after. And like that would be like, I mean, I'm sure like Wade for like so many guys like coming into the league now. Like, I mean, he's like, I mean, for guys like my age even who like obviously like I like there are so many people my age who like idolize Kobe and like Kobe's their hero. But for like my age group, like when I was getting into basketball, like it was sort of like coinciding with like that 03 draft class with LeBron, Wade, Bosch, Melo, and I think for some people because of that like that era of guys and like for people like Moutier who's in my age group like Wade like could theoretically be like his like hero like he was for Kevin Huerter. So I think like in the back of his mind like that whole game he was probably like, oh man, this is great, like I'm kicking ass, I'm gonna get his jersey after.
Yeah, I mean, not even just for your age group. I mean, I'm going to be 29 in a couple months, and even, like, when I was 16 was when Wade and Shaq won the finals.
Mm.
I mean, that was kind of like Wade's big moment of, like, you know, his coming out party as one of the best players in the league. So, like, you know, even guys my age could have realistically grown up, like, idolizing Wade, you know, because all it takes is, like, 4 or 5 years of, like, a prime of a guy's career, and he becomes someone's role model, you know what I mean? So, yeah, considering – he probably was one of the players that Moutier, you know, really looked up to as a kid or whatever. I feel for him. I'm sure that, you know, based off what you said about Wade and what I've heard about how nice Wade is as a person generally, I'm sure that he did something nice for Moutier after the game or something like that. You know, maybe had a nice chat with him or something. I'm sure Fizdale probably arranged for that too. So, we'll see. I don't know. But it was funny. And, you know, you feel kind of bad because Moutier probably put himself out there quite a bit to even ask for that. Like, as someone, so like, you know, it's tough to like reach out to your idols. Like, I was at some event a couple months ago and Chris Berman from ESPN was there, like from Sunday NFL Countdown.
Sure.
And I was like, I got to at least go up to him and be like, hey man, like I watched NFL Countdown like every single day when I was a kid. Like I looked up to you so much. Like you're the whole reason I got into what I'm getting into now, or like one of the big reasons. And even that, something so simple as that, I was like shaking like a leaf and I was like a wreck, you know, walking up to say hi to Chris Berman. So I can imagine where Moutier was at. So you feel bad for him in that respect.
For sure. All right. I think that's a perfectly sad note to end this sad second segment on. Tough run for our Knicks, but we'll come back with a third and final segment that will only get sadder. That next on Locked On Knicks.
Okay. Welcome back into the third and final segment of Locked On Knicks for today. Catching you up on a couple Knicks-related news items. The first one is something that's not too great. I mean, it's a couple days old at this point, so you've probably already heard about this, but we haven't really discussed it on here as of yet, and that is that Frank Ntilikina's season is over. The Knicks have officially ruled him out for any other games for the rest of the year. Gavin, I don't know, it's something with his groin again still. At this point, if it's really that much of an issue, I'm actually just happy that they pulled him, because I'd rather him not do something that's going to further injure himself, potentially, like, going forward in his career. I'd rather he just kind of get himself right at this point, to use a Fizdale terminology. But it's still kind of sad, because I feel like with Frank, there were some flashes, like, and they always seemed to come right before he got hurt again. And then he would get hurt, be out for X amount of time, then have to play catch up when he got back, and then finally get back to a point where you're like, okay, Frank is starting to do stuff again, and then just get hurt again. And, you know, back to the drawing board, back to square one. So I feel like it was kind of a weird roller coaster season for Frank, and I we'll get more into it on season reviews and stuff with in-depth numbers and all that, but, you know, I think it was kind of a sad end to Frank's season of what was kind of just a sad season in general because of, you know, how the injuries affected it.
Yeah, no, I'm in total agreement. It's really a bummer. And it felt like this was sort of the season. I mean, it's very similar to what I've been saying with DSJ. This was kind of the season to find out what you had in him. And these next year, presumably, the Knicks are going to be somewhat competitive and they're going to be trying to put together a winning team. So I thought this was kind of a golden opportunity to say, all right, let's just make sure Frank, like, 20 minutes a game, he's playing point guard, and let's, like, really see, like, can he shoot? Can he score? Like, can he be a competent offensive player? Can his defense hold up over a large sample size against starting caliber point guards across the league? And I don't know when there's going to be a window to get the answers to those questions. I mean, maybe he, like, plays in summer league and he has, like, a great offseason and, like, he really fixes his jumper and, like, we go into next year and he's still on the Knicks. And Fizdale says, you know what, like, we're going to play him, like he's going to come off the bench, but, like, he's going to get a lot of run with, like, whoever, like, the free agents are that the Knicks sign, whoever the draft picks are, whoever, like, the most developed young guys are, and, like, he gets some of those opportunities next year. But this just sort of felt like the most crucial – I mean, obviously he's only 2 years in, so it's kind of inherently the most crucial year of his career, but this felt, like, essential to him, like, having a future on the Knicks. And now that feels just a lot less definite because we didn't really get answers to any of those questions.
Yeah, I guess, like, on the bright side of that point you were just making about where he kind of had to prove himself as a piece beyond this year to the Knicks, I guess, like, on the bright side, if you're a believer in his potential and what you've seen out of him so far, his value probably could not be any lower than it is right now, based off the fact that he was hurt for so long. The flashes were so few and far between. He went through a few stretches this season where he legitimately could not hit anything on a basketball court, and on offense, I should say. And, you know, there's been rumors of there being interest for him around the league, but, like, it seems like, based off the reporting that's always come out after those rumors, that the Knicks are interested in, like, a first-round pick or packaging him for, like, a much better player with a couple other younger players, say Anthony Davis or someone like that. And that's all kind of a no-brainer anyway. I mean, I guess, obviously, if you would trade him for, like, if the Knicks' idea of, quote-unquote, a first-rounder is, like, you know, the 25th overall pick in the draft or something, then that's selling low at this point based off what the Knicks paid for him, you know, by drafting him at 8th overall. But, I mean, I feel like if there's one silver lining to this, it's that Frank's value can't be lower. So if you actually do want him to come back and be a Knick, I think his chances are not too bad as long as the Knicks don't change their price tag on him that they seem to have held on to since, you know, Perry and Mills, you know, started their whole regime.
Yeah. And I really feel like I have no gauge for, like, whether or not they want to deal him or how much they like him. Because clearly, like, I mean, like, it wouldn't, like, shock me, like, if Fizdale was, like, genuinely, like, so into Moutier that he was, like, okay. And, like, he was, like, yeah, we really, like, don't need Frank. He's, like, kind of inessential at this point. Like, we can get rid of him. And, like, simultaneously, it's also, like, all the reporting on that as we sort of talked through last episode has been so vague and indefinite. It also, like, I mean, as you put it, like, it doesn't feel like that much has changed. So I know this is kind of like, this isn't really helpful, but, like, I feel like I have no, like, actual understanding of, like, how much they value him, how much they see him as a piece of the future. And I guess all I can say is, and I know we're going to get more into it over the course of the offseason, I hope they give him another year because I'm still a believer. And I think, as, like, most Knicks fans feel, I don't think the track record of prematurely trading away, like, all your lottery guys, like, whether you made the right pick or the wrong pick, is going to lead to sustained success. And obviously, over the course of 25 plus years, and you can argue, like, what came first, like the chicken or the egg, like drafting bad or, like, not keeping these guys, and that's, I think, a valid argument, but it just sort of feels like that's, like, not sustainable in any way.
Yeah, I don't think I have too much more to add on the Frank front. We should probably get into our last item, which I got to be honest, I don't even really want to talk about it because it's quite frankly disgusting. But, you know, we have to report on it because it's relevant to the Knicks. So there was a report came out on Saturday night from the New York Post by Tina Moore that Kristaps Porzingis is under investigation for a rape the night of his ACL injury last year. So quite a while ago, but the accuser is just now coming forward because I don't even want to speculate why. People will have their reasons to think of why she's coming forward now versus another time. People on one side will say it's extortion, which is what Porzingis' camp is saying. Common knowledge of what we know about rape culture in this country will tell us that she was probably afraid of being dragged through the mud and things of that nature that comes with this sort of thing. And, you know, I guess we'll see where it all goes, but I don't want to get into the grisly details, to be totally honest. There is a story that came out from TMZ. We all have smart devices and stuff that you're welcome to look it up for the more grisly details. But all I'll say is that there was in the Post story, which was a little more, just a little more the facts rather than the retelling, I guess I should say. The Post story said the woman made her stunning allegation against Porzingis on Thursday afternoon. Investigators consider her credible, one high-ranking NYPD source told the Post. The accuser is quote-unquote believable, the source said, even though she did not report the alleged attack until more than a year later, and has admitted to cops that she discussed getting $68,000 in hush money from the multimillionaire basketballer. And then apparently the other nugget that came out that I guess is a little more Knicks related to the whole thing is that apparently the Knicks were aware of the investigation. We're aware that I guess I don't know, like, when the story says it just came out on Thursday, I'm assuming that this just means that the accuser finally went public, and that was probably Tina Moore's source for the story, and then she reached out to the NYPD after that. But it sounds like this has been being investigated for at least a number of months now, and that the Knicks knew about it at the time of the Porzingis trade, and then told the Mavericks about it on the call with the league. But I guess that, like, the FBI is involved, and so it's like, you know, they basically swore everybody to silence on the matter until more was known, I guess. So Porzingis' lawyers, of course, released a statement already saying it's false and that she's trying to extort money out of them and this, that, and the other. So it, honestly, I'm not willing to give an opinion one way or the other because a lot more facts need to come out about the case. If true, this is horrible. If false, then, you know, I just certainly hope that the truth comes out one way or the other. But, yeah, a pretty ugly story to come up on right after a Knicks game last night.
Yeah, it was shocking because, I mean, like, obviously I think we should, and you just mentioned it, we should keep operating with the qualifier that we don't know anything definitively yet, though obviously it's scary just to read that and, like, kind of, I mean, like, literally, like, nauseating because, I mean, obviously, like, I know, like, we've kind of, I mean, and, like, a lot of Knicks fans have, like, joked with, like, the trade stuff. They were like, oh, Porzingis, like, what, like, a snake and, like, what, like, a traitor. And, like, and I always got that, but I was, like, always, like, I mean, like, look, like, it's fun to, like, basketball hate a guy, but, like, I mean, he, at least, and this is from not covering the team, this is literally from just reading about him and watching interviews from him, I always got the impression that, like, I mean, and again, it's, like, it was possible that, like, he was getting, like, manipulated by his brother and stuff, but, like, I always got the impression, like, I was, like, I just, he seemed like a decent guy and someone you wanted to root for, and I think that was an opinion that most Knicks fans would have agreed with and, like, held true to a point before he got traded and before, like, everything went down with that, and even after the trade, like, that was still sort of my take. I'm like, all right, like, I mean, you want to drag him through the mud, like, fine, like, business is business. I mean, like, I think he's, like, a decent guy, and, like, I still, like, obviously, like, not to the same degree that if he were on the Knicks, but, like, I wanted to root for his success, and, like, the fact that, like, this is just, like, so out of, like, left field, like, it really, like, it felt like a punch to the gut, and, like, not in the sense that, like, oh, I love the guy, like, I can't believe, like, this is happening to him, but just, like, I really didn't expect it, like, I almost didn't believe it when I first read it, so just shocking, and obviously will, I mean, I guess, I mean, eventually they'll get to the bottom of it, and we'll get some kind of answer, but obviously the details are just, I mean, it's horrifying, I don't know, I don't really have that much more to add to it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the point I'll leave on is if it's true to the degree that the TMZ report says. And again, I'm not going to read those ones out because I don't want to be offensive to anyone who listens to this podcast who perhaps has been through one of these situations. But it's pretty disgusting if those things are true. The woman is black and there's apparently some very racially charged things that Porzingis was saying to her, if her account is the truth, and that would be gross. And, you know, on top of everything else with him raping her, if he's then also making racist remarks during it, terrible, 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 terrible story. And I don't want to talk about it any further. Obviously we'll update, any listeners, you know, you guys with more info as it comes out, because this was a guy that we were once leaning on to potentially be a franchise cornerstone and was part of such a big deal for this team this year. So we'll keep everybody abreast on news as it comes out. But, yeah, not anything that I want to offer any solid opinions on at the moment until we have more facts. And hopefully, I just hope that, you know, the police and the judicial system and all that get to the truth and justice is served one way or the other. So, anyway, that's kind of one of our more morbid endings, probably the most morbid ending that we've had on Locked On Knicks since Gavin and I have taken this over, but it is what it is. We're going to sign off for today. So I'm Alex, he's Gavin. Make sure to listen to us on the Himalaya app if you haven't tried that out already. Great app for your podcasts, very podcast-centric. Other than that, that's it. I'm ready to sign off. I'm at a loss for words now with that last story. So we'll sign off for today. Enjoy your Monday, and we will be back tomorrow with an update on the Knicks game tonight. Okay? Have a good one. Bye.